Hey, we're doing live radio over here. What can I say? Cry me a river, Jacob. I say to Tom, the show should be just always on. You should always be able to hear Tom, Jacob, and myself, right? Underneath Ursula.
Yeah.
Or can't we do this? Andrew, can't we have, like, our stuff in a different speaker so people, like, on their cars could, like, turn the balance to the right or left? So if you want to listen to Ursula and her very informative news, or even listen to the shenanigans going on the side quietly, can you do that?
I think I've had this conversation with our engineers. I don't think it's possible.
Okay, you know what? Maybe it's because of you.
What did I do?
Be more forceful. Get in there and demand it.
I can't make demands on the physical limitations of all the technical stuff here, John.
Why not?
Just tell John you did it, and he'll never know.
You cannot make... What was that again? Say that again.
I already forgot it. It was something about how I can't change the physical properties of the how everything's set up here.
Here comes the wagon now. The teeny tiny lady back in the wagon.
Sorry, she's the right punch.
That's right. I had to find the sound effect. There she is. And, highest paid woman in television with a net worth of $450 million.
Oprah?
No.
This car was driven by a little old lady to the Piggly Wiggly.
I do not get it.
Okay, you're not understanding me, so I'm going to tell you, stay in school.
Judy.
She does not make more money than Oprah.
She does now.
Maybe Oprah isn't. Maybe her own network she's not on it, right?
Yeah. Okay. Really? You want to go after him and Judge Judy's income and Oprah's?
Well, I was just surprised. I thought, wow, do you have an Oprah rant?
Judge Judy carrying the teeny tiny lady.
Okay. That's more appropriate.
I have often asked Tom about the idea of watching a Seahawks game, and is it worth the trouble? You know, when you watch a movie, you know the outlook. You talked about this the other day. You know when it comes to watching Bourne Identity or something, the star will not die because there needs to be another one of these.
Right.
So you're caught in the suspended disbelief of, oh, my God, is he going to be able to jump off the train in time?
Yeah.
Yes, he survives. When it comes to the Seahawks game, the outcome is not a foregone conclusion. And the Wall Street Journal has done a great job of explaining that when you watch a Seahawks game, if it feels different than all the other NFL games, you can just look at the numbers and say, look at that. It is, what, almost two times more exciting?
Yeah, twice as exciting as your average. So they looked at all something like 40,000 plays of all the teams to determine the variability in terms of outcome. And we had 53 plays this season where the win probability either increased or decreased by at least 15%, which is a wallop of a time for a single play. It happened 53 times. That on average, it happens like 26 times. So we've doubled that, and no one's even close to us. And then they say, this is the one play that most people identify the Seahawks with, sadly, is that Super Bowl loss to New England, where we had a high percentage, a high probability after we got down to like the 1 yard line of winning the game, and then we lost it, so there was this huge shift.
You know, Rye watched 100 best plays in the NFL as it's celebrating it. So I think it's 100.
Yeah,
years
that's
ago,
right. That was the year.
And the number two play,
yeah,
Beast Mode, the carry.
Is that right?
The celebration of it was 2 days ago.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, the anniversary.
Number one, Rye sitting there going, please, no, please don't let
the
it be.
Pick flag.
And he goes, and you see them coming out of the huddle. He's like,
no! No! That's considered the
number
single
one.
Most significant football
number
play
one.
In 100 years.
Like, oh, I said, so in context, he goes, not exciting, just in the total thing of like a play that had the biggest effect,
yes.
And it was that one. He goes, I saw them coming out of the huddle, like, oh, no, that's the one they chose as number one.
I know, but see, listen, there's no such thing as bad publicity. We, our team, the Seahawks, were in the top two plays
in
100 years of football. Anyway, they said that this guy says that play that happened at the end of that Super Bowl, that is typical of what's happening every game four or five times. I mean, every Seahawks game four or five times this season.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave a perfect illustration of the San Francisco game. Do we have any clips on the San Francisco game?
I got Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf during the Seahawks and 49ers.
Second down and eight. Homer now swings out of the backfield right side. Russell's going to throw a dart. He does! Touchdown! Seahawks! DK Metcalf from 14 out! And there was no waiting around on that throw. Russell steps back and fires a rocket. And Metcalf reaches up. And we've got a ball game. 26-20, the Niners on top of the Seahawks.
So coming back, crawling back.
We've got a ball back game.
20, yes.
Yes, and so this was the game that ended on the like the one-inch line where we had a fourth and 10 on the 12-yard line, and we passed it to John Ursua, who's on the one-yard line, and we went from an 11% chance in 20 seconds. In 20 seconds of the game time, Seattle's chances of winning went from 11% to 72%. Down to 24% after we got the delay of game penalty and all this. He says, this is just, Seattle is the opposite of even flow. And this kind of, you know, this is sort of the way the Seahawks play the game. Even when we're blowing a team out, like the Panthers were ahead 30-10 with like 6 minutes left, and end up being a nail biter. He says, even when they're playing against a 40-year-old quarterback who's never played in the playoffs before and is a second stringer who hasn't had a, you know, a practice round in probably, 10 years, we made it close. He was on our goal line and could have tied it up. That's just the way we play it. And, that might be to the good. The argument in favor of us is that we are now so used to it that nothing freaks us out, nothing gets us too hyper. It's perfect preparation for the playoffs. And then the article ends with, by the way, they head to Green Bay to play a team that knows something about probabilities. Aaron Rodgers has thrown three of the most improbable Hail Marys in NFL history, including one each during the Packers' last two playoff berths. So wouldn't that be just our luck that he throws one of those against us? Hopefully we'll surprise him and win in a heartbreaker.
So I guess what the point of the story and the takeaway of it is that when you watch the game, don't ever count them out.
That's
because they're not counting themselves out. You've seen other games where the guys look up, the camera catches them looking up at the scoreboard.
Yeah.
And you get the sense of they're thinking, oh, we're never going to. But when you have done it over and over and over again throughout this season, you've established a pattern that we're not down.
The problem is you can never count us out, but you can never count us in either.
Right. All right. I did get a chance to read the long piece on Edna Brady. Do you care? You want to say anything on it or what?
Basically, this is
we don't really do too sportsy stuff because people tune out.
That's right. Well, then this will tie us into Andy on the Road Less Traveled.
All right.
This guy is a Brady fan and a New England fan, and he's mourning the loss of him. But he says, but I realize that most people out there in the real world hate us because we've won so much. And he says, I think that sports fans deserve somebody that's this successful because the people that love him rally around to him, and the rest of the nation that hates him can hate him. He says, if you don't have greatness, you don't have a reason to pay attention. People, I've heard this about the Yankees. It's better for baseball when the Yankees are good because many people hate the Yankees as much as they like the Yankees, but it gives you some kind of focal point. We ought to recognize that New England for the last decade, for the last 17 years, actually, two decades,
you want to have that.
Has given, it's like a little bit of perfection that you can love or not, right. And that's why we should mourn the loss even if we hate the Patriots.
And it's a different type of hate. If you're a Miami Dolphins fan, you hate the fact that the team keeps losing and you hate the losses.
Yeah.
But when you see something like the Patriots winning and winning, it's a different hate. It comes from a better place.
You think so, huh? It's a dry hate.
it's good stuff. Larry David hates the fact that Bernie Sanders could possibly get to become president of the United States, and he has this to say.
Bernie Sanders is my guest tomorrow night. Did you know that?
I heard backstage.
You have to understand, if you don't know who Larry David is he is the guy that came up with Seinfeld, and he has a great show called Curb Your Enthusiasm. And whenever Saturday Night Live needs to have Bernie Sanders on, as played by Larry David, it's Larry David who looks just like him and sounds just like him.
Guess tomorrow night. Is there anything you would like me to ask Bernie tomorrow night? So, get an answer from him that you might want to do an impression of later.
I would beg him to drop out so I don't have to keep flying in from Los Angeles. SNL.
Right, because he's doing very well this year. He's tied in Iowa. He's raised $36 million.
I thought when he had the heart attack, that was going to be it. I wouldn't have to fly in from Los Angeles. But, he's indestructible. Nothing stops this man.
Right. Have you met him? Have you spent any time?
Yes, I met him at Saturday Night. If he wins, do you know what that's going to do with my life? I mean, do you have any idea? I mean, it'll be great.
Well,
it'll be great for the country.
Yeah.
Great for the country. Terrible for me.
Yeah.
You know, when you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm and you know that there is no script and you see him do that on the set, it's like, okay, that's perfect.
That's it. That's him.
Good stuff. I guess they bring him back in again is Saturday Night Live back on? This they are, right? They're back in again with another season.
Yeah, I would guess so, yeah.
I love what – I think the writing is so smart when he plays Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Only one pair of underwear. Right?
Yeah. When they have the debates, that's, I think, SNL's best, you know, best stuff, best writing.
Alrighty. Julian Michaels had said this apparently back in an article in the UK back in December. It has now started to make the news as well when she was talking about being healthy, being overweight. And she's on this show called BuzzFeed. And they're talking about Lizzo. Lizzo is a woman who has really taken off. I don't know how many people have downloaded, but she is like the hottest thing going right now with the number of hits that she has.
She was just on Saturday Night Live with Eddie Murphy, the last show of the season.
She is a Zoftic gal.
Yes.
Okay.
I personally found, and I love celebrities like Lizzo or Ashley Graham who are really preaching self-acceptance.
I love her music.
Yeah.
100%. Well, I don't know anything about her. I'm sure she's a cool, awesome chick.
Yeah, and I love that they're putting images out there that we normally don't get to see of bodies that we don't get to see being celebrated. And
but why are we celebrating her body? Why does it matter? That's what I'm saying. Like, why aren't we celebrating her music? Because it isn't going to be awesome if she gets diabetes.
Well, I want to ask you,
I'm just being honest, like, I love her music. Like, my kid loves her music. But there's never a moment where I'm like, and I'm so glad that she's overweight. Like, why do I even care? Like, why is it my job to care about her weight?
So Jillian Michaels, who was famous as a health instructor or a weight loss instructor from The Biggest Loser, had said back in December, and it got a lot of hype, and now it's getting picked up again. She said, look, the reality is being obese is not healthy. That's reality. But people are so politically correct now that no one will be able to call anybody on that. So then we just go to fat acceptance or body acceptance or the fact that we celebrate the fact that someone is overweight. She said, I don't want to beat up anybody. Don't bully anybody. Don't try to fat shame anybody. But you cannot deny reality. Reality is if you're obese, chances of you getting diabetes, chances of having renal failure, chances of having this and this, that's the reality. I'm not beating you up. I'm not trying to make you ashamed of your body, but let's deal with the fact that it's not a healthy place to be.
Well, she comes from with a history. I never watched The World's Biggest Loser or whatever the show's called.
See, you're doing that intentionally. It's not The World's Biggest Loser.
What
it's
is
just
it?
Biggest Loser, Tom.
It's The Biggest Loser. Okay. But apparently, she was famous for being like a football coach where she would insult the people and really be she got a lot of flack. This is only what I've read.
Having not watched it, she didn't insult the people. She would come on. She was a motivator. I know,
like Mike Leach is a motivator.
A motivator.
Bunch of lazy slugs.
Stop. Stay on. Keep going.
Okay, so that's that. If that's sort of her rep, I feel like what she did in that discussion was unnecessary. Everybody already knows, and I'm sure that Lizzo knows, and anybody else that's built like Lizzo knows that there are health risks to being as big as she is. However, I think what the other hosts were trying to celebrate was the fact that she didn't let her weight get in the way of having a showbiz career, you know, taking advantage of that great voice. Everybody can see she's heavy. A lot of people would never, you know, be willing to go out in public, let alone, go into an entertainment field when they're that heavy. And she is, I don't know much about Lizzo's physical, stamina, but she dances around stage. Okay. She plays the flute. I just saw her on the Saturday Night Live bit. She's definitely big. And I think someone who's that big that doesn't get in her way of performing and doing what she loves to do should be applauded for that. And it's not an endorsement. Nobody's raising their hand in middle school saying, I want to get as heavy as Lizzo. That's not what they're doing.
You don't need to do that. You can just have a thing called, let me ask you this, fat, good or bad?
I love the way it tastes.
Okay. But on people, fat, good or bad?
Well, you need some fat, but not that fat.
Okay. So then fat acceptance. Is that good?
Yes, because right now we are so down on fat. No, nobody likes fat that we have bulimia and anorexia and everything else. We are so body image. I think it's important to be able to not have that be the defining feature of your life.
Smoking, good or bad?
Bad in general.
Bad. Smoking acceptance. You okay with that? I'm a smoker.
Yeah.
I want you to celebrate that I'm a smoker.
Yeah.
Okay? This is my choice. This is my body. I want to do it. And I want to be celebrated in smoking. We've already determined fat is bad. Fat is bad.
Fat
acceptance is basically saying, accept the fact that I have made, or for some reason, I have got a tough time when it comes to calories. Accept my fat. Accept my smoking. No, society has determined we don't want you to smoke because it's not good because it costs us a lot of money.
They say
it costs the world $2 trillion in healthcare dollars because of obesity. And by 2030, 50% of Americans will be obese. So that is not good. Just like we try to stop
people from
smoking, you should stop people from being fat.
Okay, first off, but smoking doesn't have a genetic component to it. I mean, there's something like fetal alcohol syndrome, but smoking
does.
Is do something.
Addiction.
Yes,
does.
No, I know, and I don't think we're celebrating the addiction, but there are a lot of people that smoke that were cool and were seen as the Marlboro Man and all that. They pushed it, they marketed it that way. In this case, Lizzo is not about being heavy. I'm going to stay heavy. I want to stay this way. Clearly, she's genetically predisposed, and it would be good if she could lose some weight, I suppose. And my guess is she's probably spent her entire life trying to do that.
I don't know that either, but I do know this, that when you talk about fat acceptance, what you're saying is, and I think there's a fine line, you don't want to bully anybody. You don't want to shame them. But you don't want to deny the reality of the fact that 4 out of 5 black women in America are seriously overweight, and 1 in 4 middle-aged black women have diabetes.
Yes.
Which leads to a health crisis for individuals. And I read a great piece in the Washington Post or New York Times. The woman who is black said, black culture celebrates a larger black woman.
That's true.
And it's not necessarily good for us.
I agree. But I think that she is not promoting. She's not telling little girls.
She's telling
hey,
you,
I
accept
want you
the
to
fact
get
that
fat.
I'm black.
No,
accept the fact that I'm
fact
fat.
That I am that big. But listen to my voice, that I can still have a career. Don't be shamed into not, you know, pursuing your dream.
The reality
she might
is.
Might be more fit than, you know, than I am.
Well, that's not a high bar to
cross.
Tom, look
nobody
at
says, hey, Tom shouldn't be on the radio because he weighs more than John.
No. But it's the idea if it's a healthy choice or an unhealthy choice. And it's the whole idea of denying reality in order for us to make somebody else feel good. In one of her songs, she says, it's hard to love yourself when the rest of the world doesn't love you. I've got news for
you. That's right.
The world has don't worry about it. The world doesn't have to love you.
But it's hard not to worry about that when you're growing up.
Don't look to the world to love you. That's your biggest problem. You're thinking the world to love you for you to love yourself.
John, it would be a lot harder for you or a lot easier for you to say that if you were 3 times as big as you are.
Right, but I get up every morning and I go to the gym and work out like a maniac, and I throw up after I work out, and I deny myself desserts.
That's
Tom.
Right, and you are unhealthy for that very reason.
I'm not unhealthy.
You're unhealthy because you do not know how to accept who you are. You ought to work on a little curly acceptance.
Oh my God, are we going deep? Take you out with the truth hurts.
I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% that bitch. Even when I'm crying crazy.
Whoa, Jacob. Maybe the words in your rolling around in your hoopty mobile, but not on this show, my friend. We don't get away. You're not. Come on now.
Does Professor Honky Honk drive a hoopty mobile?
Sorry, I'm using words that kids are using nowadays.
Yeah, in the 1920s.
Right there in their name, you know what they do? They don't sell you like Washington. They sell you windows and doors. If you got old windows and doors that aren't sitting right, it is the biggest investment you have in your house. Your house is that, so make sure that your windows and doors. Entry to the home, as you egress the home, the windows and doors should be in great shape. Plus, thanks so much to State Roofing. That's also a big part. Can't have a house without a roof. Or you live like Tom, a hole in the ground. What is it, a big piece of pig iron that you got over
manhole
top?
Cover.
Manhole
you know
cover.
What those
pig
are.
Iron is the other term for it. Okay. Thanks, State Roofing, for sponsoring the text line at 98973. And just a cacophony of plugs going on. Here comes another one for you. The Know-It-All Quiz is tomorrow. And someone's going to win themselves 2 tickets. Seattle Opera's Eugene
Onegin.
You like that?
Yes.
Plus 6 tickets to the Seattle Boat Show. Holy moly.
The boat show.
And that's also a song that they're going to be doing for you there.
At the Seattle Opera Chorus.
All right. So all of that included. So you love opera and you love boats, and there you go. You got it. Plus you get a chance to be on the radio and play the Know-It-All Quiz. All righty. Great article, and I couldn't agree more. The fact that why kids need a strong network of supportive adults, or also just known as mentors.
Yes. This woman, Anna Norberg, talks about the way she was raised, and when she was tight with her aunts and uncles. She was also tight with the neighbors. She said, my parents were very good at socializing and making the effort to, you know, make connections with your with friends. They would have, you know, dinners and they'd trade off and all this. So she said she grew up with this unbelievably strong network of adults. Mm-hmm. And so she said, for instance, it was really her mom. She doesn't say how old she was, but when her mom was dying and her father was in the hospital a lot of times, she had no problem. She was staying with, you know, like a neighbor family, and they had kids, you know, about her same age. And she said that was really helpful to her. And she realizes now that she has her own kids that it's harder today to create these kinds of adult networks. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Well, now that both parents are working in the home, it's the times where they do have times with the kids, they kind of like shepherd that and want to secure it just among themselves. They don't want to like be, in effect, sharing their kids. Mm-hmm. This idea that it takes a village, she says, is getting lost because you want to sort of the shared time you have with your kid is now so precious because you don't see your kid as much. And she and her argument is that we're starting to lose that layer of relatives and friends that you always used to have. And that's really important because when your kids get to be about the teenage age, even if you've raised them perfectly with all the right instincts and all the right lessons, they will inevitably, you know, revolt against that, not mm-hmm. in any outrageous way, but it's just like there's going to be some resistance. So if there are other adults that they feel comfortable with, that they could maybe raise issues with to talk about various things that doesn't have that kind of parental tension, it actually helps the kid. And if the parents have done a good job of creating a network of adults for their kids, they can rest assured that they're getting good advice.
Yes.
It really is kind of a heartwarming take about, yeah, you know what? Other adults, and they say in anthropology, they're called alloparents. There are people who provide care that's a non-relative.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important function, and that's what your friends can do. Kids can feel can relate to those kids, and it's amazing how those friends can how helpful they can be, and how much they like it. They feel. I was asked to be a godparent to somebody. I was really honored that they would ask me to do that. He said, well, you've raised a family. You know what it's like. It's like, yeah, that's a great thing.
Did you go to the church and do that?
I did indeed.
And did they make you take a test? They don't just let you come rolling in like that.
Oh, yeah.
But no, you'd have to be able to get a letter from your priest saying that you are a Catholic in good standing, which I assume you forged.
Yes. No. The idea is that there are varying degrees of that.
No, the idea is that you're a practicing Catholic. I am going to raise the child in accordance with the Catholic Church.
In accordance as Catholic as the parents are going to raise that kid, I will be more Catholic than they will.
Yeah, so you're part of that, like, you know, not real godfather thing.
What do you mean? I'm a great godfather. Gifts every year.
Oh, wait.
I gave her first rosary.
Oh, please.
I did.
The idea of allowing your child to have interaction with a variety of people actually helps the neurons in the brain. A book called Happiest Kids on Earth are Dutch, talks about the fact that a child, an infant, will be held by a certain greater percentage of adults where they see the face of the adult. They hold the adult holds the baby. It helps the baby when it comes to just overall dealing with various people. Plus, they said that a child can walk within 2 miles of their house and go into another home, just knock at the door, and get some additional help.
Yeah.
So the idea that your community is big enough, and I thought about when I was a kid, you just walked down Sefton Road, and I could name the houses where the people lived, and they knew who you were, and everybody knew while you're walking down the road or your chain fell off your bike, somebody stops and helps you. You're right, Tom. So as we become more insular, and we don't have as much time with our kids. We don't want our kids out, you know, running around the neighborhood. We want them in the house, becoming overweight and watching video games, or playing video games. We have lost the ability to have additional connections. But you can probably right now name 3 people in your life from the time that you were 12 years old to the time you're 24 that mentored you in some way, right?
No, I think that's right. And
can
I
you
think
name them now?
The way they
just right, first names. Who do you have?
Right off the bat, no, I can't.
You don't? I mean, anybody like a teacher or a friend of a family.
I mean, so including teachers. That's right. The article mentions teachers as well. So I've gotten a lot of advice. Yeah, since I sort of have academic roots, I already have been thinking of teachers. I was thinking more of a personal friends or connections. I know. I'll name you somebody.
Okay.
My mom's cousin, that generation, she talked to me about what it was like getting old and being old and how hard it is that we are not properly training us. We're not told how hard it is to be old. Now, this was somebody, I mean, she was in her 80s and 90s, and I was having these conversations. And that really, I'm in my 60s now, and she said, oh, yeah, you have no idea how hard it's going to get. And that was sort of eye-opening from that. So that's kind of a mentorship. I think, you know, I mean, my parents both, because they've lived, they're a generation older than I am, they've gone through things that I haven't gone through. And so that's obviously a worked. And then, yeah, lots of teachers have done all sorts of great things for me. How about you, John?
Same thing, but I will play a cut from Mr. Rogers' acceptance speech from 1997 when he points out the people in your life. These are the mentors that he's talking about.
All of us have special ones who have loved us into being. Would you just take, along with me, 10 seconds to think of the people who have helped you become who you are? Those who have cared about you and wanted what was best for you in life. 10 seconds of silence. I'll watch the time. Whomever you've been thinking about, how pleased they must be to know the difference you feel they've made. You know, they're the kind of people television does well to offer our world. Special thanks to my family and friends.
Well, I thought he was going to curse at some point because I had pulled this up and had not had it vetted. And
that's
a sigh of relief on that one. I just, because sometimes Jacob's like, did you?
He's no Lizzo.
He's not. Yeah, that was a great moment. It's so crazy. Yeah. And when he did that, and the camera cuts to these people, you see people crying. Yeah. All these movie stars and stuff crying. Yeah. Yeah, the one person in your life you would think about it was there for you.
Okay, well,
good
so
stuff.
Name one, John. I want to hear
Dick
you.
Mallory, when it came to my TV career.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then Tom Jones, who was my dad's best friend growing up across the street from my father. And I used to go to New York and go, I don't understand my dad.
Yeah,
and he gave me
a
total perspective of my father. Great guy.
That's perfect. That's exactly right. That's interesting. We both went to the next generation, our parents' generation.
Yeah, yeah. To help
somebody. Yeah.
Come right back with your letters. You can write to us. State Roofing's got the text line for you, 989-73. There you go, Andrew. Plus, you'll write to us at mynorthwest.com. Letters pouring in now. Teeny tiny lady is just up to her elbows in letters of the day. Right back. We don't normally take questions from our studio audience, but a gal in the back there. Yes, hello.
Is my pizza going to be covered in cocaine today?
That's a good question, Tom.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
It will. Definitely?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, then. Here comes the mailman now. He said, here comes the mailman.
I heard you.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. I can't do anything about that.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm the mailman, as you can see, I'm the mailman, don't nobody mess with me, I'm the mailman, if you didn't know, I'm the mailman, bring the mail to your door.
Right to your door, teeny tiny lady standing over there.
Hello!
Proud as can be, proud as a peach. She's chosen the letter of the day, and we're going to get started with the letter of the day in just a little bit. No, not yet. She whiz. Shake her jar when she does that, would you, Jacob?
So we've got the landlord policy on the minds of our listeners. 425 writes in, you can't evict with 20 days notice. You can terminate a lease with 20 days notice. And that's only for month-to-month leases. Mm-hmm. The Crosscut article indicated that's true of Seattle. I thought it wasn't true of Federal Way. We'll have to
425, eviction reason. I want to charge the next guy more.
I don't know if that'll fly. Yeah. On the Harry and Meghan deciding, Meghan Markle deciding that enough is enough. We're going to split our time between here and there. Breaking news, 253. 35-year-old man resolves to move out of his parents' house and give up his allowance.
360 says Prince Harry is a trained military helicopter pilot. I'm sure he'll find something to do.
And Tom in Seattle, as it appears that both Tom and John are regularly missing from the show, I suggest that Prince Harry consider a role here as a fill-in. Bring a spot of elegance to the show and a perspective even more grand than Mr. Curly regularly provides. Just a thought.
425, continuing with the theme. I've really been in touch with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle giving up their taxpayer income starting today. I'll be donating all the coupons I get in the mail to homeless people. And to make Rachel Bell happy, I'll be doing it Kiwi style in the nude. Wow, like I tried to cobble it all together there on that one, didn't I?
On the Twitter policy changes, Trekker Meg writes in, is a toilet human a new subspecies of potty mouth?
That's what Thomas being described as, a toilet humor person. Toilet human?
Yeah, a toilet human.
Sorry. Deepfakes. Nick from Orca says, the best deepfake I have seen recently was when someone put Nancy Pelosi's head on Donald Trump's body for the Home Alone 2 scene that was cut out of the movie from the Canadian television.
On DoorDash Teens, 925. We have the opposite problem. A lot of my teenage son's friends want to come over for dinner.
Oh.
So we tell them that they have to let us know by 4 p.m. if they're going to join us. Also, if my son is going to go out and not eat dinner with us, then he has to let us know by 4 p.m. as well. They don't get to choose what they eat. They get what they get. Mm-hmm. We require that our kids eat with us at least 5 nights in a week.
Wow, that's good. Janet in Kirkland says, is dinner my mom used to say, eat it or wear it. Needless to say, we ate whatever she made.
On Jacob's return, you and Raymond. Whoa, Tom, Curly, and Jacob all together in the same studio. I can't believe it.
Yes, and 650, a.k.a. the Culinator. Jacob, comma, see what happens when you try and you get away from the big show. No daily dose of funnies from Andy or Wes or Larry or Ghost Boy and the rest of the groovy gang. Good to have you back, buddy.
There you go. On the issue of gift cards, 253. I love getting gift cards because I feel like it gives me the permission to buy something frivolous since I have to use it at one particular store.
That's good. For the high morale standard group of us, it's sometimes hard to cut loose and stick it to the man. We crave a pack of smokes and James Dean's way of life, but these damn ethics keep getting in the way. But no more. Regifting gift cards is the victimless crime. I enjoy each holiday season.
And we hear from Eric and Bothell.
Once made famous by this show.
I think gift cards are the perfect solution for those people who are hard to buy for. At our ages, we have 3 generations to buy for. Our generation, our kids, and their kids. You do need to be careful, though. We have given gift cards. We subsequently discovered the recipient had to travel several hundred miles to actually eat at a particular restaurant.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Letter of the day, Tom, and the remaining 29 seconds of the show.
Comes from 425. Hey, guys. Thanks for the show today. Mm-hmm. It has given birth to my band's new name, Toilet Human. The first album will be called Birthday Honeymoon.
Oh, good.
And P.S., Ryan should ditch the arches and move on. A buck's a buck, right, John?
Absolutely.
But it's rye, not rye.
It is rye, just rye.
But thank you very much.
Yep.
Out of time. Bye-bye.